Podcasting from a secret location under the mats. This is the Lessons from the Dojang Podcast, a podcast that literally has nothing to do with martial arts, but instead, we discuss the biggest news stories of the week. Kind of makes you wonder how we came up with the name, doesn't it? Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and attorney Frank Natal.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your midweek lesson, Lessons from the Dojang, for our normal Wednesday. I am your co-host, Master Patsy Zarilla, and with me, as always, your other co-host and my dear friend, attorney Frank Natal. Frank, I want to cut everybody off real quick, but we're recording this at like 4:24 p.m. Eastern time, and the House panel has now just started just started voting on holding AG Barr in contempt. First of all, how you doing? And second of all, how do you think this vote's going to go?
First of all, I'm doing fantastic. I've had a great day of just listening to a lot of the debate during this Judiciary Committee meeting in the House and revolving around the vote on Barr's contempt. And, you know, watching and paying attention to a couple of games today. I was watching the Ajax game and keeping updated on that with Ajax Tottenham. And, you know, just driving down to Baltimore. So I've had a really good day. And I'm ready to jump in talking about this because this has been a really, really interesting and historic day today.
Yeah, it really has. For, you know, I don't care what side of the what side of the aisle you're on. One thing you have to admit. You're seeing history unfold right in front of you. You really are. And you know, how this plays out, it's going to play out, you know, whichever way it does. But recognize that you are living through a historic moment, not only in our lifetimes, but in our in the lifetime so far of our country. It's really amazing what's going on right now.
It certainly is. So you asked me, you know, what I thought about the vote, and I do want to, you know, I'll just answer that question very quickly, but I want to delve into some of the things that happened today during this meeting, during this debate, and just like kind of a from both a civic standpoint, from a strategy standpoint, and it's been amazing. It's just been totally amazing. So the vote is going to come down along political lines, and I'm hopeful that there'll be a few Republicans that do break from party lines, and there's some slight indication that that may happen, but it's very unlikely. I would say the odds are probably, if I had to be a bookmaker on this, I'd say that the odds are, you know, say 9-1, 10-1, that this is just going to be a purely political lines vote, but the Democrats are going to vote to hold Barr in contempt. The Republicans will vote not to. And the reasoning will be the Republicans will stand behind this idea that Barr is legally obligated not to release the unredacted report in its total form. The problem with that argument is that it's based on the idea that it's not to be released for public consumption. And the Democrats have conceded and willingly negotiated. And this is where I start to believe that they've been playing the long game, they've been playing the chess game, and that we've all been very frustrated. People have been frustrated and want to get to the end of this process before you get, you got to have a start. You've got to have a start to a story. You've got to have a middle of a story, and you've got to have an end of a story. And, you know, that's what they're doing. They're going through the process. Sometimes it's painfully slow, especially when you're dealing with somebody like Trump and his enablers who do not play by rules. They clearly do not play by the rules, and their supporters like that he doesn't play by the rules. So we that want to see that ended, we want to see that kind of behavior ended, we sometimes think, well, let's get to the point real quickly and just stop this behavior. But the people that play by the rules and want to enforce the rules have to actually live by the rules. So they're doing that. And what the Republicans who have stood in line to protect Trump and Barr in this case are saying is he's not allowed to release the unredacted report. Well, the Democrats have kind of boxed them in on that. What they've done is said, look, there's this 6E and 6G protected material, and I'm not going to go into, you know, technical terms on that. But the thing is, we've talked about this before, Master Patsy, the grand jury testimony. and classified information dealing with foreign intelligence. Those things are going to be protected, and they can stay, they can remain redacted. According to the Democrats, they've said they'd be willing to allow those things to be redacted, but that they would also have been hopeful that AG Barr would go to court with them and ask for the court to lift the requirement that those things stay protected, because an AG can do that. And there's been this side argument all day about, well, Jerry Nadler went on CNN and said every other AG has gone to court, and that's legal that they've gone to court and said to lift the requirement to keep that stuff redacted. And the Republicans are jumping on that, saying, no, not every other AG has done that. There's no legal requirement to do that. And they're parsing words around that. But the Democrats have not got caught up in that argument. What they're saying is, look, other AGs have done it. You can do it. He's not willing to do it. It's a pattern here. It's a pattern of obstruction. So you, we've given you every opportunity to say, you know, we can have the report without these two things in it. You want to obstruct us from getting it. We've given you every opportunity to go through the civics process to take its course and let you have every chance to amend our request or amend our vote on this this contempt hearing. And the Republicans have put forth over six hours worth of amendments and arguments during this proceeding, where they've said, you know, we want to do this, we want to change it to this, we want to change it to that, we want to change it to that. And Chairman Nadler's allowed them to go through that process, and he's allowed them to argue and debate all day long about it. And, you know, at the end of the day, they've got to take a vote. And if the Republicans, after hearing everything they've heard and boxing themselves into the corner, are willing to stand with AG Barr and try to protect him from this contempt proceeding, first of all, they're going to lose. They're going to lose in the contempt argument, and the Democrats are going to win because they've got the numbers. Second of all, they're going to lose historically, because people are going to look back at this moment in time and look at everything that was said and see that all it was subterfuge on the parts of the Republicans trying to say, but what about this? And what about that? And you make arguments on CNN that aren't really arguments. Who cares? What we care about is the argument right now, today. Is he required to turn it over? Yes. It was subpoenaed.
Yes.
We gave you every opportunity to keep things redacted, certain things redacted. You didn't want to play that ball. Too bad for you now. You're stuck in this corner. So they're going to lose today, and they're going to lose historically.
Well, that gives me a bunch of questions for you. And here's my very first question. I agree that this is going to go down along party lines, right? I completely agree with that. I don't see how it doesn't, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't see how this does not go along party lines. My question then becomes, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, these Republicans who are obviously going to be the downvote, they're going to vote no, that he should not be held in contempt. Their names are going to be attached to their vote. They already jerry-rigged most of the elections, right? So it would take an enormous effort. It would take a whole lot for some of these guys, not all of them, granted, not all of them, but a whole lot of them. It would be an enormous, well, hell, it'd almost be an act of God for them to not be reelected. So they're going along party lines just to go along party lines. How do you think they kind of justify their no vote when it's obvious, it's completely and totally obvious that AG Barr, whenever he was in front of I believe it was the Senate at the time, the last time he was in front of Congress, he was totally, literally in contempt of what they were doing. He didn't want them involved in anything, and he was not going to look at this body of government, this co-equal body of government. He was not looking at them like a co-equal body of government. He was addressing them and looking at them as if they were a nuisance. How do you think these guys are going to be able to justify their downvote and to vote to not hold them in contempt whenever all you have to do is watch it and saying, yeah, I mean, he's not acting in good faith. He's not acting in the way that an AG should act.
Well, your question leads me to a few things, and I appreciate the opportunity to elaborate on them. Thank you. The thing that really is part of what I alluded to earlier, they're gonna try to couch this in the way that Barr is legally responsible to protect this report, to keep the parts of this report sacred and secret by law that he's required to keep secret and sacred, and that's what he's doing, is upholding the law. That's what they're gonna fall back on. It's a false narrative. And the problem with the narrative is this: it gets into the weeds, okay? And this is so exciting to me, because what's always been the problem of the Democrats in these cases is we've got to get into the weeds to explain why our position is better than the Republicans' position. We've got to always get into a lot of detail to try to tell people, listen, this is what's going to happen if you keep going along with Republicans. It's going to be your downfall. It's going to hurt you in the long run. And here's why. We've got to go from step A through Z to get to that point. So while the Republicans try to fall back on this position of, well, he's got to protect the law. What do you mean he's got to protect the law? Here's where their problem is. Because last month in March, a little bit over a month ago now, they voted unanimously in the House, 428 or whatever number of the Congress representatives there are, to zero, to have the full Mueller report handed to them. They voted bipartisan, 100% to have the full report provided to them by AG Barr. No Republican objected to that whatsoever. So that's not in the weeds. That's a pure, simple, easy fact for the American public to digest. So the constituents in every one of those people's counties and congressional districts is going to see that they voted without reservation to have that report supplied to them. And now, a month and a half later, because the fact of the matter is, some of them have seen what's in the report, they want to say, no, 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 no. We don't want the full report now. We don't want the full report now. Then they have to get into the weeds to try to explain why they don't want the report. The American public just wants the point blank fact. You said the report should come to you. Now you're saying it shouldn't. Your explanation is bullshit. It's bullshit. And I don't care how gerrymandered the district is. They ain't buying that. Believe me, Patsy. That's Patsy. Those people are not going to buy it. So that's why they're going to lose today, and they're going to lose in the face of history, because they got to get into the weeds to try to explain their answer, and it's not going to work. And the third thing that I'm going to say about it, and this is very important in Kentucky, Tennessee, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, everywhere in the United States, this is going to play horribly for the Republicans. They have to admit, and they have admitted today, that our country was attacked, and that the attack was undertaken by the Russians, a hostile foreign power. And it was done to try to influence our election. There were two or three of them that validly said this openly in the hearings and the debate today. But what they try to do is fall into this whataboutism. Well, it happened during Obama's presidency. So what does that mean? If it had happened during Truman's presidency or Roosevelt's presidency or the presidency before Roosevelt, should we not have fought back against the Germans during Roosevelt's presidency? If it had happened, you know, before Winston Churchill took office in England, during Neville Chamberlain's office, does that mean that Winston Churchill shouldn't have fought back against the Nazis? So what we're saying is, if it happened during Obama's presidency, that we as a country, because we're Republicans and now we have a Republican president, we're not going to fight back against the Russians because it happened during Obama's presidency. That's not patriotic. That's not American. That's not the way we live. The Tennesseans, the Kentuckians, the Ohioans, the Pennsylvanians, the Michigan people from Michigan, they're not going to stand for that. They're not going to let their representatives say, no, we're not going to fight back against the Russians for this because it happened during Obama's presidency. And now it's going to just, it'll be okay because we got a president named Trump. So it's going to be okay now. No. Ain't going to work that way. They're going to lose, my man. They're going to lose.
Well, you know what? You bring up a good point about it happening under Obama's presidency. And I'm not correct because I am correct. The intelligence community let who was then President Obama know the vote had happened. He's just waiting out his term now until January. And he was the intelligence community informed President Obama that there was Russian influence and they did hack our elections. They did do all of this stuff. He immediately went to Congress and I do not know what his name escaping me, the Speaker of the House at the time.
Ryan.
It would have been Ryan at the time. I don't know what he did, but I know Mitch McConnell fought him and said, if this comes out, I will shape this as a partisan attack. Right? So the Republicans were already in Trump's pocket before he even took the oath of office. And I will sit here and I will say point blank to everybody who's listening, Mitch McConnell's compromised. Okay? I will say that. And the reason I say that is because don't forget, everybody's only talking about the DNC that was hacked, but don't forget the Republicans were also hacked. Okay? They were. Look it up. They were also hacked. Number two, regardless of when it happened, Congress still has a responsibility. Right? It doesn't matter when it happened. It doesn't matter what point in history it happens. You're Congress. You still have a responsibility to address this. And, you know, you and I have said it on this pod, and Master Grant and I have said it on YouTube on Sundays over and over and over again. Two things in politics you can always count on. You can always count on two things in politics. On the Republican side, they will fall in line. And they will put their party ahead of their country. So the Republicans will fall in line and the Democrats will wait to fall in love, right? They will always put, I don't care who it is, if you have a D after your name, they're going to put you to the purity test. Every one of them. Democrats continuously, you know, slit their own throats. But that being said, your argument and your statement above before that is dead on. It's dead on. I hope you're right as far as them eventually having to pay the price for their decisions today, which makes me wonder why they're doing these decisions. But speaking of these decisions and speaking about how this thing has gone today, and you heard everybody speak and you watched everybody speak. One of the questions I have for you, and I'll be honest, Frank, this is a leading question. We didn't talk about this ahead of time, so I apologize. I'm kind of catching you off guard a little bit. But just how big of an asshole is Jim Jordan?
He's almost a caricature of he's almost like a character on Saturday Night Live. You almost can't believe that a human being that's in a position of highest regard, you know, a United States representative, federal United States representative from the state of Ohio, is going to go in to this public forum before the country and say and do the things that he says and does, especially, you know, knowing that there's history here. We can look back at you don't have to look very far. You can look back, you know, a few decades to see what happened with Nixon and the people that supported him and how they're looked upon as, you know, being enablers and betraying our country. It's almost like I said, you know, you could write a skit on Saturday Night Live and make some of this outlandish farcical character. And he's the man. He's the man to play the role.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, it's frightening. Whenever we were in high school, you and I are in high school, we graduated together. We've known each other for God knows how long. It's ridiculous. I was a wrestler, you know, at Newcastle High School. I was one of the, you know, six wrestlers that we had. And to say that we're a little touched is a bit of an understatement because we really are. But this guy takes it to an extreme. I've never seen anybody that really looks forward to making such a complete and utter fool of himself as he does. It's damn near impressive. It really is how far he's willing to go to make himself look the fool.
It's amazing. You know, before we get off the topic, I just want to say this. As I respect the heck out of you guys that did that wrestling, and I think we were kindred spirits then too, because I ran cross country and there was about, uh-huh, you know, nine of nine of us running varsity cross country. It was two of the sports that were probably, you know, the least recognized in our high school, but yet you had to have a lot of dedication.
Yeah.
A lot
of
you had to be borderline crazy to go out and run 13 miles on a weekday after school to get ready for a 3 mile race. And you had to be borderline crazy to run, you know, and do all this, the reps that you guys had to do to go do a 3 minute.
You guys were nuts.
to do a 3 minute wrestling and get your, you know, get your ear boxed in by somebody and get pounded off the paper, off the mats like the way you guys did. So
even we said you guys were crazy. Yeah. I was like, yeah, there's no way we're doing this. There's no way. I'm sorry, but you know, honest to God, it's an amazing time right now. Let me ask you this, and then you know we're going to continue on. Obviously, the Democrats in the House are in a really strong place. The Republicans in the Senate, and I said that intentionally because each one is in power, right? The Democrats are in power in the House. The Republicans are in power in the Senate. They're the majorities in each house, in each chamber. The Democrats are putting themselves in a really good position right now in the House. Again, I'm speaking specifically in the House, and that's where this contempt vote is happening, is in the House. Okay, so the Democrats are in a very strong position there. They have the numbers. I would guess, and I have nothing to support my argument, but I would guess they probably have the majority of the public on their side as far as wanting to make this thing as transparent as possible. Obviously, this is going to be split along, you know, party affiliations and whatnot. But I think generally speaking, if you would ask somebody, do you think Congress should be able to see this full unredacted report and should have access to this information? I would guess that a majority of the American public would say yes. But let's look at it because, you know, as a martial artist, I'm always looking at the yin and yang. And that is the yin. That is the positive. Here's the yang. Here's the negative. What would happen? I'll grant you, I'm being very hypothetical about it. What would happen if the Democrats, or if this vote, what would have to be the Democrats, gets knocked down and this vote fails and they do not vote to hold AG Barr in contempt? What happens to the Democrats' strength and their position? And what do you think will happen? And I'm being very specific from a very Democratic point of view, as opposed to a Republican point of view.
Sure. I think that they would lose a lot of confidence of the voters, lose a lot of confidence of the public. And because of what you just said, you know, there's been an overwhelming support from the public for transparency around this issue. And people are not ready for this to go away in spite of what Republicans are trying to say. You know, the problem is this. I mean, I think that you and I, as we sit here today, have been willing to say, and at times we've been impatient. I've been impatient. You've been impatient. Mm-hmm. But we've been willing to say that there's a process to this, and that we trust in some of the folks that have said, let's make this process take its course for the better good of all of us as a public, as a republic, so to speak. So we've been willing to kind of give that time and space for them to do what they need to do. But if this vote, which has now been taken up, they've now said, let's have a vote. And they brought it to the floor, and they've really done a good job of shepherding through why they should have a vote today and giving their reasoning while allowing for debate. If they don't pass this resolution to hold him in contempt, I think they would lose a lot of public support. I do.
Do you think they're dead in the water? I mean, I understand. I'm being very black and white and very, you know, extreme about this, but if this contempt vote fails and AG Barr is found not in contempt of Congress, do you think that the Democratic Party, generally speaking, on this issue and the whole obstruction issue and everything else, Do you think the Democrats are, generally speaking, for the most part, dead in the water?
Yeah, I mean, I think that just if you take this isolated question, and I think that people...
And I understand. You know, I'm being very specific. I'm being very isolated, but...
And I understand why. It makes a lot of sense. And I think that we're now less than 2 years out from a presidential election and less than two years out from senators and representatives running for office again. And I think that it would play very poorly. And I think that you could go as far as to say that, yes, they would be a pretty much lame duck, almost dead in the water party, no wind in their sails if they don't follow through with this.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that anything else they try to take up, you know, climate change probably being top of the list, but just go on down the line from there. I think that they have totally weakened themselves to a point where no matter what they bring up, no matter what Pelosi brings up, there's just no reason for anybody to go along with them because they just don't have they just don't have the cred to do it. I really think that.
But let me say this. I would be very shocked, and I would say that for those folks that follow this podcast and give comments and share their thoughts on this podcast, I'll go so far as to say this. If you comment after this show, if they don't vote to hold him in contempt, this committee doesn't vote to hold him in contempt. I'm not saying the full House, but I'm saying this committee. If they don't vote to hold him in contempt and that doesn't pass, that resolution today, the first person to comment after this show on the podcast page.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'll send you a Starbucks coffee voucher for the first person to comment if they fail to hold him in contempt. Okay, that's how strongly I believe that will not happen today. And let me just say why. Look, even Eric Holder was held in contempt of court or in contempt of Congress.
Yes, so he was.
It's not, you know, it doesn't mean anything in terms of ultimately what does that mean? Does that mean he's removed from office? No. But it's a rebuke. It's a public rebuke. So I think they'll do it. I have very high confidence that they will do it.
Yeah, I do too. I'll be honest. I mean, you know, if I was going to place a bet, I would bet that, yeah, there's the resolution is going to be voted in the up, and he is going to be held in contempt. That's going to lead to a bunch of other questions that we probably should wait until our next pod as to, okay, now what's going to happen now that he's held in contempt and so on and so forth. I'm going to switch gears here for a second. But along the same lines, the White House, Trump in particular, because nothing happens in this White House without Trump saying it. Even when the White House does say something, it's all about Trump, because how many times has he contradicted what the White House is saying? He's trying to assert executive privilege over the entire Mueller report. The entire thing. All of it. Being a lawyer, I really want your opinion on a couple of things. And not just what I'm asking you. I mean, just go crazy on this. Can they do it considering everything that's happened? Does he have the ability to invoke executive privilege over the entire report? And I guess number three is, can he really? Let's be just down on basic. Can he really do this?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you the lawyer answer, and that's when people come to my office and they say, can I do this? Can we send a letter to somebody saying this? Can we do this? Can we do that? And if I've advised, you know, governmental entities, or I've advised agencies or anybody else, heads of agencies, can we do this? Can we do this? So the answer is always a mixed bag.
Oh, Frank, I mean, I'm losing.
Yeah. What's that?
I lost you there for a second.
Okay, I'm back. I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. So the answer is always kind of a mixed bag. I would say that when somebody comes to the office and asks that kind of question is,
yeah, I understand there's not going to be a black and white answer to this. I think everybody understands that.
Sure, you can do it. The issue is, can you get away with doing it ultimately? And that comes back to the political will on the other side. You know, so the issue is, will he succeed in doing it? And he can do it. He can say, I'm going to assert privilege and I'm going to keep this from you. And the people that are holding it, i.e. Attorney General Barr and his staff, are going to say, well, you know, the client that's the United States president really shouldn't be his client, but that's the way he's treating him, has said that he's asserting privilege over this. So I'm not going to turn it over to you because the president of the United States, who's my boss, says he's asserting privilege. So that's another reason why I'm not going to turn this over to you. So can he do it? Sure, he can do it. Does it mean that it holds up? No. I think that the political will on the other side, if it's going to be strong and carries forth, they can go to court and say, and it sounds like they will go to court from what I'm hearing today. Mm-hmm. They can go to court and say, he's waived his privilege. And then there will be a legal argument that takes place. And the legal argument will go something like this. The president turned over thousands of documents per his own admission and per Sarah Sanders' admission. Look, we've been so transparent. We've turned over thousands and thousands of documents. We've given hours and hours of testimony. Okay, so that means you've waived the privilege. So will he be successful? No, because the argument is going to be that he's already waived the privilege. You can't then – look, that train has left the station. You can't now come back and say, pull that train back into the station. People have seen it pull out of the station. It's done. You're done. You can't do it. So you can do it, but you're not going to get away with it. As long as the political will is there to go to court and argue it.
Well, let me ask you this much. Do you think that do you think he has a leg to stand on? Do you really think that I mean, well, let me ask you two questions. That one being number two, and I'm sorry, I'm doing this backwards. Number one, my initial question, my biggest question, my number one. Do you think that AG Barr is acting as the attorney general, or do you think that he's acting as Trump's personal attorney? That's number one. And number two, do you think he has a leg to stand on with this whole idea of asserting executive privilege over the entire Mueller report? Or is he just trying to delay and delay and delay?
Yep, it comes back to that, and we'll get into that in a second. That's my favorite question, but the first question is a great question too. And do I think that Attorney General Barr is acting as Trump's kind of personal attorney? Yeah, I mean, he's definitely. I mean, look at the pattern here. Look at from the very beginning. You know, I think we talked on one of our first few pods about the hope and the desire that Bill Barr, as a career politician, you know, somebody who's been involved in politics and in the D.C. Beltway, that he would somehow do the right thing. And there was the hope and the desire, and I think you said maybe there's a little bit of naivete, even though that you don't consider yourself a naive person, but you wanted to believe that, and I wanted to believe it as well. But I think the pattern is there, and it's clear. You know, going back to the Iran-Contra thing, to the time that he auditioned for this job by sending a 19-page memo, speaking to an audience of one, as we've heard from other people say that, you know, Barr was telling Trump, he was signaling to Trump, you hate your current AG. It's no secret. You hate Jeff Sessions. You hate him. You can't stand him. Here I am, man. Look at me. Look at me. I know the intricacies of this government, and I'm telling everybody right now, including you, that you can't be indicted as a sitting president. You can't be guilty of obstruction. I'm writing that right here down and memorializing it for you. This is my job interview. This is my audition. And Trump took him up on it and said, yeah, you're my man. And now he continues to follow through for his man. He's doing that every single day. So, yes, he's his personal attorney. He's his fixer. He's his new Michael Cohen. But more dangerous because he holds the position of attorney general. And he's got the gravamen or the acumen or the experience of being, you know, in that position for many, many years in the past, or being an insider in the Beltway to know how it goes on. To be able to do it again. So that's my answer to question number one. Question number two, does he have a leg to stand on? And it comes back to some of the discussion we had earlier, but it also invokes something that I've been wanting to talk about. But you know, so much to talk about, Master Patsy. There's so much to get through today. It's interesting because Trump is a master at doing some of this stuff. He doesn't care if he has a leg to stand on. He's going to just do and say what he wants to do. And that really excites a lot of his base. They're like, yeah, yeah, just do that, man. You just pull this action that, you know, that you want to pull, and we're going to support you on it. Because it's almost like saying, like, if I go to court and I defend somebody, because I've done both, I've defended people and I've prosecuted people in my career. And you know, there's cases where there's clear law against my defendant and there's clear facts against my defendant, but my defendant's very sympathetic and people can understand the plight of my defendant or they're on his side or her side for some reason. And we hope for that one last gasp in court, which is what we call jury nullification. And that's when a jury says, okay, the facts and the law are against your guy, but we don't really think he should have been prosecuted. We think he was just targeted. And we think that it's a bullcrap. It's a bullcrap. Boy, oh boy, Tottenham got by Ajax. How about a comeback in their game? They came back and won, and they go through. Amazing. So anyway, there's jury nullification, and I think Trump is looking at this as, I'm going to have the public nullify because I can get enough of the support, or at least enough of the PR support, to say that I shouldn't have to turn anything over. I should be able to do what I want to do because I'm the president. And he's got enough of this political will and power, and he's currently in power, to be able to do that. But the crazy thing is, on the other side of his mouth, the other side of his mouth and his mouthpieces that speak for him, including Barr and other people that I've heard talk today in these debates on whether Barr should be held in contempt, they say that somewhere in the Mueller report and somewhere in the investigation is this idea that somehow there's a conspiracy, that there was a coup to take down Trump embedded in this whole thing. And that's what's in this report. And that's what the important thing in this is. So then if that's the case, if that's truly the case, then isn't it time to release the full report so everybody can examine it and say, hey, if there's been this coup, that's a legal coup to try to take down Trump, shouldn't we see everything, including the investigation? So that we can make our decision on that, and so that we can say, yeah, Trump has been wrongly accused, and we've been trying to take power from him illegally, and it's been set up from the beginning. So then release the whole darn report. But then on the other side, he wants to argue, no, it shouldn't be because there's these issues with it and this and that. But it's a total exoneration of me. And not only is it a total exoneration of me, it goes one step further and says that they've been trying to overtake me from before I became president, which is just absolutely ludicrous. So this is where they're going to fail again, Master Patsy, because you can't have, and it come back to the law. I was trained classically by some great litigators who said, don't have an either or argument. You can't have an either or argument to win the case, because what that shows is weakness. It shows the jury that you're not confident in your primary argument. It gives them the idea that you're falling back into a different position because your primary argument isn't good enough. So you always stick with your best argument and you lead with your best argument. You stay with it. What Trump is doing and where he's going to fail on this is he's saying, don't have the full report released. But if it is released, it actually doesn't just exonerate me. It shows that there's this grand coup. And no red-blooded, everyday, down-home, table-talking American person is going to buy into that.
Wow. Wow. You know, you explain things really, really well. And I got to be honest, I completely agree with everything you said. And I'm trying to look for like an argument to keep this conversation going. And I got to be honest with you, Frank, I can't do it. The only thing where I think maybe you and I might disagree a little bit is I firmly believe that there are things in the Mueller report and anything at that level and that nature where the general public really shouldn't know. And a lot of that goes back to my background, right? A lot of it goes back to, you know, a security background to doing things where folks who aren't, well, it's not a good argument to make. I'm gonna sound really like an asshole saying it, but there are certain things that the general public should not be privileged to. And that might come as a shock or a surprise to a lot of people, but I really believe that. Now, that being said, I do believe in co-equal branches of government. And do I think that the Nancy Pelosi's and of the world should be entitled to the same, and Mitch McConnell's, to be perfectly honest, should be entitled to have the same, to have access to the same information that the president has? Yeah, I do. I really think they should. Does that mean that I should have that same access to that same information? No, I really don't. I don't think, and I will say this, and I'm going to sound like an ass saying it, but I honestly believe it. The fact that Donald Trump got more than five votes, the fact that he got more votes than him, his wife, and his three kids, tells you, or tells me, that the general public isn't prepared or can't handle having all of this information made available. They're just not ready for it. They can't do it. They can't handle it. So I will sit here and I will say, do I think the general public should have access to the entire unredacted Mueller report? No, I don't. Do I think Congress should have that information and should be available? Do I think they should be able to see it? Yes, I do. Especially people like Adam Schiff and again Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell and those people who obviously have security clearances. Yeah, I think they should be entitled to see that information, and I think they should be entitled to act accordingly on that information. I don't think the general public should, because I don't think that the general public can handle it. I don't think that they should, generally speaking. I don't think people can handle the information that is given to them or that is in that report, the unredacted report, and be able to come up with some sort of rational decision, regardless if I agree with it or not. I don't think that people, the general public, is capable of handling that level of information. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. And if I am, you know, everybody can comment and they can tell me, you know, yeah, you're full of shit, or yeah, you're dead on. But I don't think that there's a lot of people in this country. And if it's released to this country, it's basically released to people around the world. I don't think that they're capable of handling and understanding the depth of what happened and how much is in there, and are going to be able to make rational decisions based on that information, whether I agree with their decisions or not. You know, I've never said that in order for you to be rational, you have to agree with us, you know, with you and me. However, I do think that if you do not agree with me, and to a large extent, even if you do agree with me, you have to make an argument as to why you do so. And it has to be a good argument, or it's not, or you're just going through the motions. That being said, I do think that the House and the Senate, and especially the people who have the security clearances. And let's be honest, Frank. You can say what you want to about our government, and you can praise it to high heaven, or you can condemn it to hell. But if you have a security clearance, if you have a clearance where you are privy to top secret information, they did their job, right? Whoever gave you that clearance did their job, and you earned that clearance that you have. They just don't do this shit on a whim, regardless of what Fox News tells you, right? They're pretty thorough about their vetting process. And I have to believe that whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent, if you are granted security clearance, you earned it. And this idea that they should not be entitled to see what Robert Mueller has dug up and what he has found, to me, is ludicrous. It's absolutely, totally fucking ludicrous.
Well, I do agree with you, and I agree with you mostly throughout everything you said. The only thing I differ with you on is I think that the Mueller report, portions of the report need to stay private, and the reason from the public, and the reason I think they need to stay private from the public is not necessarily because the American public couldn't process it and handle it, although I think there is a portion that couldn't. I would have to say, you know, there's people that just can't, but it's the security issues around the foreign intelligence issues that may be involved. And that is so important to our country's protection and safety that we have to protect that stuff. We have to protect our FBI agents, our CIA agents.
Exactly. People that are gathering, exactly.
They're gathering intelligence about foreign hostile powers that could use that information against us. And that, for that reason, it has to stay private. So I have no problem with that. And quite frankly, the Democrats who are seeking this report have no problem with that either, from what I've heard today. They want that to remain private from public eyes too. However, as you said, there's no reason why the Congress should not have their eyes on this thing. And the Senate should not have their eyes on it. And they've all said as much when they previously talked about it. But now when the rubber meets the road and the president says they shouldn't see it, all of a sudden they've changed their opinion. So that's where, you know, we come back to that again. And it's a question of, you know, co-equal branches of government and our system and the civics laws and the civics rules and the civics education that we got in this country. Are we operating under constitutional guidelines that say there are co-equal branches of government, or are we now operating in a system of government that means that one form of the one branch of the government has been elevated higher than the other two? And that's what Trump wants, and that's what he's trying to send up a trial balloon around. And when you asked me that question probably 10-15 minutes ago about does he have a leg to stand on, can he get away with this, well, he can try, and he's certainly trying. The question is, will he be pulled back into reality? Will our constitutional form of government pull this back to the reality of, nope, we're co-equals. You're going to have to live with it, buddy. And the question is, do we have the political will to force this to happen? And ultimately, is it going to be jury nullification? Or is the public going to say, no, 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 just leave him alone? Or is the public going to say, you better darn well go get that report. You better darn well hold Barr in contempt. You better well do what we asked you to do, what you're sworn to do as the Congress of the United States.
Yeah, I really believe there's a big difference between somebody who's sitting in let's say Nancy Pelosi's position, as opposed to somebody who, you know, is talking to you on a podcast, right? There's a big difference between what you and I should know as opposed to what Pelosi and McConnell should know. And I'm good with that. I'll be honest. I really am. I think that's how it should be. These are people who are who are making decisions that you and I are not in a position to make. Should we be? Well, that's a subject for another pod altogether. But at the end of the day, as it sits right now, we're not in that position. And so we shouldn't be privy, or we shouldn't have the ability to obtain and have the same information that these folks have. So I don't think it's a fair argument. And it's one of those things where I think the Democrats kind of dropped the ball a little bit again, where they sit there and they say, well, people should the unredacted report should be available for everybody. And I sit here and I say, no, it really shouldn't. It really shouldn't. You cannot expose people who probably are relying on anonymity or on secrecy or whatever you want to say in order to stay alive, right? Because if you do it here, and let's say it's cut and dry, let's just say for argument's sake, you and I have no way of knowing, but let's just say for argument's sake that there's nothing that is in this report that really puts anybody at risk, which I find hard to believe, but let's assume there isn't. You've now set a precedent where the next time somebody has to this sort of situation comes up, but your source is somebody who's been undercover for God knows how long, or if their name or identity is found out, they're probably going to die. Well, you've already set a precedent where, you know what? Too fucking bad. You're out. And I think that's a very dangerous thing to do. And I don't want to see that happen. So if you and I never see the unredacted report, but the Nancy Pelosi's and Mitch McConnell's of the world do see the unredacted report, I'll be honest with you, Frank. I'm thrilled to death if that ever happens.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to believe that will happen. I'd like to believe that there's just going to be, again, a matter of time, and that the process is, and that the game, I'm sorry, the playbook that's being employed by Trump and his enablers, including Barr, is that they're going to delay and delay and muddy, and that'll buy them time to formulate these crazy conspiracy arguments, and continue to win over their base and other folks. But I think that the report will finally be in the hands of, ultimately, will get in the hands of the Pelosi's and the Mitch McConnell's of the world, and that they'll be able to act upon it. And in that vein, while we've been on this podcast, apparently the Senate Intelligence Committee has subpoenaed the appearance of one Donald Trump Jr.
The Senate has?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
Isn't that a big shocker?
That's huge. I would have expected that out of the, well, almost expected. I'd have been far less surprised if it came out of the House. The Senate is asking for that.
Right. Comes to the issue of, will they ever break ranks, which seems like there's some cracks there. And also, if they start looking at this issue of one of America being attacked and how we deal with the attack, and it specifically is dealing with the Russian interference in the election, you're looking at a moment right now where, after Mitch McConnell just said openly, this is over, there's some defiance to that. This must not be over, even to the Senate, who Mitch McConnell is the leader of. This must not be over because they're subpoenaing Donald Trump Jr.
Dude, how bad does it have to be? How compromised does he have to be that less than 24 hours ago, he makes a statement like that says it's over, and then his Senate is now subpoenaing Donald Trump Jr. How bad does it have to be? That's I almost feel bad for the guy. I'll be honest, I almost do. I don't because I can't stand him. because you know it's one thing if you're in his position and you kind of try to lean things your way, right? Because let's face it, any politician is going to try to do that, right? Newt Gingrich was a master at that, right? He really tried to lean things his way. Who was there whenever Reagan was president? O'Neill?
Tip O'Neill.
Was that who? Tip O'Neill, right? He did the same thing. He really tried to lean things his way. And let's understand each other. O'Neill and Reagan hated each other. They really freaking hated each other. I mean, it's epic. It goes beyond it's just that dynamic between the two of them is huge. And people don't quite get the depth of which this hatred came from. But at the end of the day, both of them were willing to put their country ahead of their party. I don't see that in Mitch McConnell. I truly don't. But the fact that a chamber of Congress is now looking at Donald Trump Jr. and telling him he has to come and testify. That's pretty big. You know what's even bigger is the fact that Tottenham got through and beat Ajax, and they're in the finals against Liverpool.
I can't even believe it. You know, I was feeling a little bit down yesterday, and I know you were too.
You have no idea. My heart broke. My heart literally broke.
The result that came out of Liverpool at Anfield yesterday was stunning. And you know, I was hoping for Barca to come through, but I have to say, just as a coach of soccer and a lover of the game, you know, I respect the athletes that are on the field, and for them to find the fortitude to come back from a 3-0 deficit, you know, and they could have been down 4-0. Let's face it, you and I were on our pod last week when that was happening, and I was screaming out, get that win, as Barca was going in for that fourth goal at the end of the game, and they had a wide open net and they missed it. But you got to respect the players, because look, they didn't have Mo Salah yesterday. They didn't have Firmino yesterday. And they went out and they took it. They took it. I mean, Barca made some mistakes, but those from Liverpool took it. So, but let's look at this. Even better than that is today in Ajax, in Amsterdam, Tottenham is down 2-0 on 3-0 on aggregate. 3-0. They were down 3-0 on aggregate on the away field starting the second half. And my goodness, in one day, in one half, they overcome a 3-0 deficit on the road. With Lucas providing all three goals for Tottenham. What a performance. Is he going to be a man of the match? Is he going to be a player of the week? You better believe it.
Yeah, he really is. And I know a lot of folks really don't follow European soccer, and I'll be honest with you. I can't say I blame you, but if you did, then you're hooked like we are, and those hooks will be in your soul until you die. But my heart broke yesterday seeing my Barcelona, my beloved Barcelona, the only club on the planet that I cherish more than the New York Yankees, pretty much. Well, they gave it up, and you now have a Liverpool side, and being, you know, that Manchester United is like my second favorite side on the planet, which is my son's favorite side on the planet. Watching Liverpool do anything is frightening. It is the equivalent to being a Yankees fan and watching, you know, Boston win the World Series, right? It is the equivalent to being a Steelers fan and watching the Cleveland Browns win the Super Bowl. It is a heart-wrenching experience. And to see Liverpool go to, you know, at home, and admittedly they're at home, beat my beloved Barcelona freaking killed me. And that was a real hard thing to swallow, especially whenever you consider Barcelona had a 3-0 lead, and a year ago Barcelona had a 3-1 lead going into the game in Rome, and they ended up choking on that one too. So, you know, it might be time to change managers. But I looked at this game today, and Tottenham isn't a strong side. I mean, they're a really good Premier League side. They're a good side. They're Champions League side. They're Champions League quality. But to be in the finals now against Liverpool, and you now have a Champions League final that has two English sides in the final, where even a year ago, that was almost – there's no way in hell that would happen. I'll be honest, it says a lot about English soccer. It really does.
I got to admit, you know, I wasn't putting a lot of faith in that. I mean, look, the Premier League is a Premier League. It's undoubtedly, you know, unquestionably at the top three every year, year in and year out, no matter how you slice it. They're a top three league, and most people would argue the top league. And I'm not going to argue too hard against that. But last year,
I'm not either.
Last year, there was some evidence that La Liga was better. There was some evidence that the top four or five teams in Serie A in Italy were better. But, you know, that's not the case this year. The evidence is there objectively. You know, you've got an all Premier League final in UCL and the way that they've played in other competitions in the Europa League, you know, the way Arsenal's played there, it's almost undeniable that this year the Premier League is just head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yeah, it's really stunning to see that. And I know like a lot of folks are going to look at us like or listen to us and be like, what the hell are you guys talking about? But yeah, let's face it, you and I are hooked, right? We really are. We're hooked into soccer. You know, your son plays, my son did play, and you coach, and regardless of how that goes, Pele made the had the comment that he called soccer the beautiful game, and I kind of took the negative approach to that. And I said, nothing will break your heart more than soccer will, right? Nothing will. If you are a supporter, if you get sucked into this dynamic that is the game of soccer and you decide that you're going to support a club, and I don't care who it is, I don't care what league it's in, soccer will break your heart. It just does. And you keep coming back for more. And that's a statement. I absolutely love Barcelona. I love FC Barcelona. I love everything it stands for. I love everything that they do, which is, and I love them for the same reason I love the New York Yankees. It isn't because of the 25 or 26, you know, World Series championships they have. It's about more than that. It's about how much money and how much time and how much effort they spend in their community and how much that they're willing to give to a lot of organizations that a lot of other clubs in a lot of other sports aren't willing to do. It says a lot. And FC Barcelona pretty much says, I mean, they actually pay UNICEF to use UNICEF's logo on their kits every year. No one else would do that, right? So I'm a huge Barcelona fan. I'm a huge New York Yankees fan, not because, like I said, not because of the history of the New York Yankees, but because of what they give back. To me, that's far more important, you know. If I was a fan of a side that just won championships, I would be a huge, you know, New England Patriots fan. And I'm not. I can't stand them. But that's because they're more interested in winning Super Bowls than they are in supporting communities or supporting whatever, you know, people come to them and say, yeah, help us. To watch the Champions League, and for folks who don't know, the Champions League is Europe. It is the top three or four or sometimes five sides in the five or six or ten top leagues in Europe who battle it out. They go through a knockout stage, which is teams are grouped. It's set up kind of like the Olympics are, where you have the groups, and if you survive your group, you get into a knockout stage. So it's every country is being represented in Europe, and that's a big deal. And the fact that you have two European sides, two English sides in the final now, in Tottenham and Liverpool, who a couple of years ago, people would sit there and say, that's just never going to happen because Spanish soccer was so good, and you had the Juves, the Juventuses in Italy, and the Bayern Munichs, and who's the other side in Germany who was just really, really good, and the PSGs, you know, the French sides who were just so good, and they're sitting there, and now, less than 2 years later, you're looking at two English sides in the final. If you don't follow soccer, you have no idea how big that is. That is the equivalent of having two mediocre NFL teams in the Super Bowl. You wouldn't believe that would actually happen at any given time. But here we are. It's huge. It's absolutely enormous. And I can't believe it's happening. I mean, I'm happy it is, but I can't believe it's happening.
Just a, kind of my last note on it, I read something yesterday by Pep Guardiola, who is the manager of the Manchester City side in the Premier League, who is battling for the Premier League title against Liverpool, which is a separate matter than the UCL championship that we're talking about right now. the Premier League is won just on points. It's like playing a whole regular season of baseball and you don't have a World Series. It's just who has the most wins or the most points at the end of the season. That's who wins the title. And right now, Manchester City is in control of their destiny. If they win their last games and Liverpool even wins their last game, Manchester City.
I believe
City
there's only one game left, right? Each side only has one game left, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right. I know that coming into last week, Manchester City had one game in hand, meaning they had one more extra game than Liverpool, but they may have played both of them at this point. But if Manchester City wins their last game and Liverpool wins their last game, then Manchester City wins the title. And Pep Guardiola is the manager for Manchester City, and he said the other day that there's only been like two clubs in the history of his whole time in soccer that he's actually just like fought and said the word wow about that club. And one of them is this Liverpool team. And he says, you know, when he watches the talent that runs out there every day for them, it's just a wow moment for him to see, you know, that squad, which says a lot, really.
Yeah, it does. And the other side was the Barcelona side when Luis Enrique was managing them.
You're right.
And that says a lot whenever you consider that Pep was Barca's manager at one time, right? And he won a treble. And, yep. You know, whenever he sits there and says that somebody who was managing that side after he did was the side that he just thought was one of the best sides he's ever seen. That says a lot. And the fact that he's looking at this Liverpool side as one of the best sides he's ever seen says a lot to me, especially whenever you consider that the whole Manchester-Liverpool thing. I mean, generally speaking, it's Manchester United-Liverpool that's the big rivalry. But you can make an argument that Manchester City-Liverpool is a big rivalry too. And the fact that he said that about a Liverpool side who is now in the final says a lot about a side, you know, and a city in an area in England that is far more than just the city that gave us the Beatles. It really is.
Absolutely. And I'll say this. I might have fibbed a little bit and say about my last point, but this is a little bit different than my last point. I kind of don't like Liverpool. But not because of the players, but because of some of the fan actions. Going back to last year when Loris Karius had a bad game in the final, and a lot of the fans were saying horrific things to him online. They were abusing him, taunting him. Their own fans were after him. And Liverpool fans are very voracious in their love for, but also sometimes over the top in their actions around this squad. So I said out loud in front of my son, who's 9 years old, that I didn't want to see Liverpool win for that reason. Because of not wanting to
see. You know, the funny part is my son, who's 18, who's going to be 19, and myself said the same thing. We looked at each other. We were like, you know what? I hope Liverpool never wins another thing. Simply for the exact same reasons that you said. Because of their supporters. Simply because of their supporters. I never want to see them win another thing as long as I'm alive.
And you know what my son said in response to that I said that to him, and this is from a 9-year-old, and that's so beautiful. He said, Dad, what about the players that train every day and they work their heart off? They work their heart out to go win those things. And Mo Salah is a good person. You know, he treats people in the community good. He takes care of people. He's a good human being. You can't root against him. And I said, you know what? You got me there. You're absolutely right. It's not about the fans. It's about those players working their butts off to go out and win. I can't hold it against them.
No, I can't. I've said before, and you know, if you would ever talk to my son, he'll tell you, I really like Klopp, and I really like the style that he plays, and I really like what he does. And apparently, I guess the idea is if you talk to Liverpool supporters, Klopp can walk on water. I mean, no one says anything bad about Klopp, and Jurgen Klopp is the manager of Liverpool. For folks who aren't following the line. I happen to really like the guy, and I really like the style that he plays, and there's a lot of positives that I have with him. So my negatives aren't necessarily with what he puts on the pitch or his players. I love Mo Salah a lot. I love him more for what he does off the pitch than what he does on the pitch, because I think he's a little above average, to be honest with you. I don't think he's a world-class player, but he is a legit, honest-to-God if you're looking for a role model for your kids or even for yourself, Mo Salah is somebody who you really should look at because this guy just hits it out of the park. I just love how they play, and I love watching their game, and I love watching how they do things. And if you're a soccer fan, you cannot help but be impressed with how Liverpool plays. You just can't do it because they're dynamic and they're exciting and they're fun. And you sit there and you watch them and you see Jurgen Klopp's interaction with his players, and you're like, I don't know if I can imagine myself as a soccer player and how I would play and not want Jurgen Klopp as my manager. I can't see that happening. I truly can't, because this guy's just, he's all about his players all the time.
Absolutely, Master Patsy. This was awesome today, buddy. I'm looking forward to next week. Maybe we can break down some of this tax stuff on Trump and some of the efforts underway to continue to get new tax returns. But I think we probably run out of time for today.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, we went a little over than we normally do. We're like almost 71 minutes, which is a little more than we normally do. But Frank, I as always, I can't thank you enough for spending your time with me, and for everybody listening, and for everybody who downloads our pod. Like we say every week, whether it's on a Wednesday or on a Sunday, your time is very valuable, and the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. You really do not know how important it is to us that you're willing to spend your time with us. So we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And trust me when I tell you, we're not making any money on this. But Frank, I look forward to talking to you probably throughout the week, and obviously again next Wednesday. I'll let you clear this out. Any last words to any of our listeners?
I just hope everybody has a great end of their week as we head into the end of the week here. And, you know, keep thinking about, you know, what we talked about last week about the long view and the long term for our society, for our world, for our kids. I just want to encourage people to keep thinking about what's really important in your lives as opposed to the immediate, you know, the immediate money or gratification that comes from those kind of things. So just want to re-encourage people to kind of think long-term and the beauty and the value of those things that are really important in your lives. And thank you all for sticking with us through this and for your participation with us on Twitter and on YouTube. And I'm looking forward to hearing you and Master Grant this Sunday, by the way, Patsy.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. We're going to have to get you back on the channel, on the YouTube channel here pretty quick. Maybe within the next couple of weeks. We can't see if we can't drag you away and take an hour or so of your time. So to everybody again, as Frank said, thank you for your time. It's very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend that time with us means a great deal to us. So, speaking for Frank a little bit and speaking for myself as well, thank you all for listening, and we will see you again and we will talk to you again next Wednesday. Same time, same channel, same everything. Holy shit, the things that are going on in our country right now in the U.S., it's historic. It's absolutely historic. And whether you agree with us or not, you have to admit you're seeing history play out right in front of you. Don't discount it. Accept it. Enjoy it. Relish in it, because it is the stuff of legends. So thank you all, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Butchered Sports, raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Lessons from the Dojang with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show and want to know more, check out dojanglelessons.com and please leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Join us again next week when we discuss whatever the hell's been going on.